are listening to a podcast from The National.
The first tennis Grand Slam of the season has been consigned to the record books, and history was made in both the men's and women's events. Roger Federer continued to defy age, science and all logic to successfully defend his Australian Open title and win his 20th major. For Caroline Wozniacki, her long wait for a first Grand Slam title, 43 tournaments to be precise, came to an end after a titanic battle in the final with Simona Halep. As the first Grand Slam of the year, the Australian Open has the potential to set the tone for the season. So what's in store for tennis fans for the rest of 2018? This is a special tennis edition of the Extra Time podcast. I'm your host, John Turner. Joining me today in the studio to talk all things tennis, Graham Cagle. Graham, how you doing, mate?
Very good, thanks.
Good stuff. Look, let's start right at the top of the show with Roger Federer. I mean, it's obviously the logical place to start. I mean, really try and put into words the sort of magnitude of the achievement, what he's managed to achieve on Sunday and overall in his career.
I think we just run out of words, really. It's like superlative probably would be the one that really sums it up, because there's an amazing stat that since 1968, when the Open era and professional tennis began, there's been 200 Grand Slams. And Federer's won 20 of them. So he's actually won 10% of the men's Grand Slam tournaments.
I like that.
It's a crazy stat, but I think it just does sum up his legacy, because in July will be the 15th anniversary of him winning his first Grand Slam title at Wimbledon. And it's just the longevity of it has been amazing. Like, he's looked after himself beautifully. He's not really had any really serious sort of long-term knocks. Obviously, he had his little time out at the 6 months at the end of 2016, which in hindsight probably helped set up this like regeneration now, because he had his downtime at a time when a number of other players were, in hindsight, running themselves into the ground. And I think he's, again, setting a standard that other players are going to learn from in terms of not just the standard of play, but how you manage your career. Because I think we're going to come on to his schedule and stuff.
If you looked at his achievement from 12 months ago when he won the Australian Open, having been out for that quite lengthy injury spell, it had a sort of swan song feel to it. Perhaps it was great to see him back in the winner's circle again, Grand Slam's winner's circle rather, after such a long time. But it felt perhaps one of maybe a few until he might call time in his career. But the way he won it this year is almost like a complete regeneration, or like a renaissance, in terms of it's like a second era of Federer. It feels, even at 36 years old, he's outplaying all the younger guys, he's looking fresher than all the younger guys. I mean, compared to some of his major rivals, he's actually fit compared to some of them that have either limped their way through tournaments, or in Andy Murray's case, couldn't even make it to the starting line. So, and that was, you know, he came into the tournament as the heavy favorite, he lived up to that. And, you know, despite a couple of wobbles in the final, essentially safely saw it through. So it's really quite a remarkable achievement that what he's managed to do, both in this tournament and since kind of returning 12 months ago.
Well, I think the most interesting thing was that the most trouble he had kind of almost brought on himself, because in the final against Cilic, he said himself he kind of froze a little bit in that second set tiebreak, and it gave Cilic the opening and really kind of got him going. Because you feel if Cilic had dropped that second set tiebreak and had gone two sets, Federer would have cruised the third. But as it was, we got a cracking final, which I think it was good that Federer achieved it that way. And it was also good for Marin Cilic, because it exercised a lot of the demons of that Wimbledon final last year. Again, I think he's handled himself fantastically. He's clearly looking after himself and knows at the age of 36 exactly when he plays, how he looks after himself, how he trains. He's remodeled his game hugely, because, as he said, last year in Australia, it was kind of a relief. He'd been waiting almost 5 years for this one. And he's won Wimbledon in between as well. And it's a case of, like, this could be the way the season's looking right now. It's obviously early in January to sort of call it. But you'd have to say he'd be a very big surprise if he didn't win Wimbledon again in July, the way that... And the US Open, if he might probably make some adjustments to his schedule this time, and maybe not even playing a warm-up event for it, because I think he's playing well enough, because obviously I think it was in Cincinnati he hurt himself or sort of tweaked himself in playing Zverev, and so he could easily win three slams this year, because I think we'll come on to the clay season. I think I'll be amazed if he goes anywhere near the clay season.
Well, let's discuss as you said, Federer was very selective with his schedule this year. We obviously expect him to do the same again this year. he was saying, discussing his schedule for the rest of the season, that he hasn't made any decisions yet. He's going to evaluate his fitness levels and how he's feeling now the Australian Open's out of the way. But we expect him really to, in all likelihood, to miss the clay court season again. I mean, it worked so spectacularly for him last year. You can't really see the benefit of him doing it this year.
No, completely, because he made a joke of it at the end of last year, because obviously he had the run on Rafa Nadal. He won every match they played. And obviously, as we know, in the last decade, when Nadal came through, Nadal had the run on Federer most of the time. And someone, I think, in a press conference asked him, what's the secret to actually finally beating Nadal? Is not playing him on clay. And so, obviously, we don't know what Nadal's injury situation is going to be later on the year. But presuming that Nadal is fit and healthy, most of it is going to be formidable on clay. But then you've got a lot of the younger guys. Are sort of Dominic Thiem was terrific on that surface last year. If Novak's got his game back up by then and the sort of is fit and healthy, Novak's terrific on the clay surface. And there's lots of sort of players who are good in that. And I just don't see why that would appeal to Federer and his body, because like clay, sort of you're sliding around a lot. You're doing a lot of pressure in your joints and doing that. It, as you said, it worked perfectly last year, sort of ducking out and coming back for the grass court season fresh, perfect, and on a surface that he loves. And realistically, that you can only think of three or four people who could possibly challenge him, and one of them might well either not make it or will be coming back having played barely any tennis for a year, and Andy Murray. So why risk it?
Yeah, makes sense. If Federer is to stick to a similar schedule to last year, that means, fingers crossed, he could be coming to Dubai next month. He also did say that, again, no decision has yet been made on Dubai, that they were in talks with the organisers of the Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championships before the Australian Open, but decided to hold off on any decision until after the tournament to assess his fitness levels. I mean, it'd be really nice to have him here, wouldn't it, for a week. Funnily enough, it was one of his only blips last year came in Dubai, but I mean, seven-time champion, it'd be great to have Federer back and again as the Australian Open champion. And of course, wherever he goes, he's going to pull in the fans and add a lot of stardust to any tournament he plays. It'd be great to have him here.
Oh, absolutely. He's so hugely popular, and he sort of carries himself so well. Ever since being a young player, he's always sort of had a bit of a charisma on him that sort of fans have lapped up. Selfishly, obviously, it's going to be fantastic to have him. In a way, Dubai's been so lucky to have him so much. When you say you're a seven-time champion, sort of, it's fantastic to have. And even during his sort of years of sort of, we call it the drought, when he wasn't winning slams between 2012 and January 2017. But it was still great that, you know, we were still seeing some of his best tennis. And in many ways, I like to think Dubai probably did help him in many ways. He was remodeling his game, sort of becoming much more sort of focused. Sort of, he clearly worked with Stefan Edberg quite closely on his game in that capacity. And I think the UAE has seen some of his best tennis in that capacity. So I'm relatively hopeful he will come, because I think it worked for him last year on the schedule. And I think he does like it here. So as far as we can see, there was no wear and tear. Obviously, I think he'll give it a little while, because it was five sets. And obviously, the adrenaline is probably still high from his amazing achievement he completed on Sunday. But I'm quietly hopeful.
Let's move on to one of his great rivals. We've mentioned him a couple of times already, Rafael Nadal. I mean, there was a lot of question marks surrounding him heading into the season. Of course, he pulled out of the Mubadala World Tennis Championships here because he needed some more time to recover from injury issues that were kind of hanging over from last season. Of course, then he kind of went into the Australian Open kind of undercooked, managed to get to the quarterfinals. Before, again, injury kind of struck. It wasn't a problematic knee injury this time. They're saying it was a torn hip muscle. It should only be out for a few weeks. But again, when injury strikes with Nadal, there's always going to be concerns, isn't there?
No, completely. I'm wondering now, in hindsight, if we're going to know that this last year was a freak year for him, because ever since around 2013, 2014, there's always been a niggle every year. He's had problems. They had wrist issues. He's had knee problems. He's had niggles, sort of a builder. And like last year, up until the knee problem at the start of November, he was injury-free from January through. And on clay, it felt like we were watching Nadal from 2005, 2006. Like, just as Federer has turned back time on grass and Wimbledon and the hard courts in Australia, Nadal turned it completely back to almost like he was a teenager again, with how he dominated particularly the French Open. And that's always the worry, the style of play he plays and how much pressure he puts on his body, that this could happen. And in a way, given how little tennis we'd actually seen from him before we came here, like a quarter final was a good result, really, in hindsight, because it keeps him at number one. I'm not sure how much that motivates him still. I think it's obviously a great honour to have it, but I think you could tell how gutted he was when he shook hands with Marin Cilic at the net, how much he was sort of frustrated again that his body had kind of let him down at a key moment. But I think going forward, I'll be interested what his schedule is like for next coming up. I imagine his schedule will be very similar to what he did last year, sort of go to Indian Wells and Miami, play a bit of the hard court, and then throw it all on the... Because he pretty much nearly had the perfect clay season last year, so he's got a lot of ranking points to defend there. But throw it all into there and then almost treat the rest of the year like a bonus, I imagine, would be his approach to it.
Makes a lot of sense, yeah. Well, if there's fitness doubts around Nadal, his game looked in decent shape. But what did you make of Novak Djokovic? I mean, there's always fitness doubts surrounding him heading into this year, and his game looked below par as well, didn't it? The elbow clearly isn't quite right yet.
It's a strange one, because it was good to see him back, and the only way he is going to get back to sort of fitness and health is probably to play. But you could see it wasn't right, and obviously it ended up sort of ultimately costing him the match, because he's clearly had to change his serve, which is always a worrying sign when a player has to completely readjust a part of their game, and what being a very successful part of his game. Like, I think I saw some clips after one of the matches that he was actually serving slightly faster, but he'd lost his accuracy and his consistency. And the one thing about Djokovic is his ability to sort of bring out the big points when he needed it, like the pressure, like find the first serve and stuff like that. Because Andy Murray would have loved to have had that serve against him in those Australian Open finals in the past. That's the one worry, is hopefully this is going to case of like the elbow is going to improve and sort of going to find time. But the fact, like, we thought we were going to see him at Mubadala, and then he had to pull out just beforehand, because obviously something had happened in practice. He wanted to give it a little bit more time, and he did give it a bit more time. But then 2 weeks in Australia, it was always going to be a huge demand, but it's clearly not right. So again, it almost sounds like repeating ourselves, but it's going to be fascinating to see how much tennis he chooses to play. And again, from his point of view, whether he wants to do the clay season, because Wimbledon's probably been one of his happier hunting grounds. Because you think of how hard he had to work to win the French Open. It's one and done in many ways. Like, I'll be amazed if Djokovic ever wins it again.
So this brings me on to kind of my final point of this part of the show, Graham. You're looking at Nadal with concerning over injuries, even if this one seems a minor one. Andy Murray, of course, just had hip surgery. Stan Wawrinka was clearly nowhere near his best. He kind of tumbled out early to Tennis Sandgren with a knee problem. And obviously with Novak Djokovic with his elbow. Do you see those top boys now kind of following Federer's lead and being a bit more selective and being a bit more careful with their schedule over this season or even next season, the following season, when they are hopefully back to kind of full fitness?
I think tennis itself is going to have a look at itself in terms of what they want, in terms of, because you look at the schedule and, like, you know, sort of they're playing from the opening weeks of January all the way through, and sort of like the WTA sort of wrap up at the end of October. But for the top boys, if you get through to the ATP Tour Finals, you're playing basically into the last week in November. Because that was the thing that kind of amuses me in Mubadala. I think I heard Kevin Anderson say it, and I think Dominic Thiem spoke about it. And I think Yelena Ostapenko as well, all vividly saying, well, it's been great to have some downtime, and now for the new season, it's like, you've had about 5 weeks off. And I know, obviously, they're not playing for that season, not playing every week. But some of these events are grueling, and you think they're travelling around the world everywhere they're going. And I think certainly, from going back to your point, I think certainly Nadal and Djokovic and Stan and Murray will definitely look at what Federer's done. It's obviously easy to pick and choose when you're an outstanding player and you're going to pick up enough ranking points, because the game tournaments when you enter, you're probably going to win. You're not quite, and I feel bad saying this about him, you're not quite the David Ferrer school of picking tournaments that the other big boys aren't going to. It's not quite that level. But just being very, very selective about where you need to go, because those boys have got nothing to prove. Where the challenge comes is for the younger lads and the younger ladies on the respective tours who are trying to prove themselves and become superstars, because there's events every week. Like, if you go on the WTA and ATP tour websites, like, it's shocking just how many events there are. And each event wants superstars. There's a demand for it, and there's pressure on these players to play. And we're used to having injuries and stuff, and, like, because we haven't even mentioned Keenan Shikori as well. There's other players as well, all sort of going down with niggles. And we had slightly less withdrawals this year at Australia. But it definitely is an issue. And I know it's sort of already being sort of addressed already. But I think the tours have to come up with something as well, like whether it's less mandatory events that the players have to play in. But the players have just got to be more responsible and look after their bodies. And it doesn't appear, it appears there's loads of money sort of coming in. Like, I know in sort of the men's game, Federer and Djokovic are pushing for more money to come in prize money and stuff. So they've just got to be smart.
Okay, Graham, that's the kind of big boys out of the way. What else kind of caught your eye at the Australian Open? Of course, the big runs, deep runs to the semi-finals of Carl Edmund and Hyun Chung, two young players. That's obviously a good sign for the future of the game there.
I think Federer was very complimentary of both of them. And it wasn't just a passing comment. I was quite impressed with how he spoke in the press conference about it. He'd been asked what he thought of them, and he expected him to sort of do a throwaway line, but he was very complimentary of both guys, particularly Chung. He liked the look of him, and it's a real shame he couldn't give himself more time in the semi-final before the blisters hit. But Carl Edmund really sort of had a great run. You think of taking out Kevin Anderson, who'd looked sensational here at the Mubadala tournament in terms of a serve and volley. So to put him out in five sets was a hell of an effort, and he built on it. And sort of all you can do in these tournaments is sort of make the other guy beat you, and he lost to a better player than Marin Cilic on the day, and so he's got no regrets. And the challenge for both of them is to build on it.
The interesting thing is the out of all the young players that are trying to break through to the next level, they probably weren't the two that a lot of people might have picked to go deep in the tournament. The kind of leading contenders of the so-called like next generation in terms of rankings, in terms of prestige, guys like Grigor Dimitrov, who has been confirmed for Dubai, looking forward to seeing him next month, Alexander Zverev, Dominic Thiem, Nick Kyrgios. How did you assess their time in Australia, and do you expect big seasons for all of those guys?
I really liked Kyrgios. I thought he carried himself very well in the tournament, and he lost to a very impressive Grigor Dimitrov on the night. And I actually thought that was going to be Dimitrov's breakout tournament. I thought how he handled himself, because Kyrgios has really calmed himself down. He really seemed focused. Obviously, still a little mad moment here and there, but compared to previous ones, pretty well behaved. But Grigor handled him outstandingly well in front of a partisan crowd, and you thought, yeah, he's going to kick on here, get to the semis, and with the draw the way it worked out, he'd have had a cracking chance to get to the final. And instead, he produced a very meek performance against Carl Edmund, and was very, very disappointing. Just all it did was bring up the questions again of how much desire does he actually want to do this, because you can't just rely on talent alone.
Right, well, let's move on to the women's side. Arguably, the more interesting tournament for many people. Certainly, let's start with the champion, because she deserves plenty of attention. Caroline Wozniacki, former world number one, now back at number one, has finally won her first Grand Slam title. I mean, the final itself perhaps wasn't the most... there were certainly moments of brilliance in there, but in terms of intensity, in terms of the battle, it was enthralling viewing.
I absolutely loved it. I thought it was one of the favourite games I've seen in a long time, just between... You had the drama of the two girls. They've both waited so long to win this first title. And you knew one was going to finally get it and the other one would have more despair. I'm genuinely glad. I was kind of open-minded on who was going to win it beforehand. I'm glad it, in hindsight, went the way it did, because I think Wozniacki's rebuilt her game and her confidence really well and played a terrific final. But I think Simone Halep deserves a hell of a lot of credit as well, because you think of the disappointment she's bounced back from losing the French Open last year to Yelena Ostapenko from a great position. But she's embraced being number one, and she's had her best run at the Australian Open and came really close to winning it. There was only a few points in it, and possibly in hindsight, the fact she played more hours in the tournament kind of caught up with her towards the end. But I definitely think she can look back with no regret and feel like Caroline won it rather than she lost it.
100% agree with that, yeah.
And so I think going forward, it'll be interesting to see if Caroline can kick on from this, because sometimes the floodgates can open once you've got that first run. And the way the season's opening up, who knows? But I definitely think I'm much more confident after this tournament, bizarrely, that I think Simone Halep will definitely win a Grand Slam than I was before.
Interesting. I think as well, you look at Wozniacki now, back end of last season, WTA Finals champion, got to the final in her warm-up tournament. I forget where it was. Was it in Sydney?
I think it was Auckland.
It was Auckland, was it? And then wins the Australian Open. Now, this is now a woman that is, after how many finals did she lose last season before she eventually won her titles?
I think it was seven, wasn't
something
it?
Something like that. So this is a woman now that has got that kind of champion's mentality, that knows how to do it on the biggest of stages. So you wouldn't be surprised now if she kicks on and wins a few more. And she's still only, what, late 20s? Mid to late 20s?
Yeah, no, well, It's scary because she came on the scene very young, sort of like she got to the 2009 US Open final, lost to Kim Clijsters. And you thought she'd kick on, and she had that long period. She had 67 weeks in the early 2010s at world number one, but without ever stringing it together at a Grand Slam. Her Grand Slam record, when you look at it, during that period was awful. Lots of third round and fourth round matches. But as I said, the ball's in her court now, because we know Serena's coming back. Well, she wants to come back, but we've no idea what kind of level she's going to be at. Like, from what we saw in Abu Dhabi, the hitting's still there, but the movement's going to take a hell of a lot of work and sort of in training. And there's going to come a point where Serena want to do as much work as she needs to do on that side of things. But it's an exciting time for the game, because you've got players like Muguruza. She's definitely sort of more than capable of dominating the division, but she's struggling for consistency. You've got Pliskova, Svitolina, and Wozniacki and Halep are both up there at the top, who are now probably the most consistent of everyone right now. So I'm really looking forward to women's season. I think it's going to be tremendous going forward.
And I think most interestingly, outside of the two finalists, the woman that probably created the most amount of buzz at the Australian Open was one of the semi-finalists, former champion, former world number one, Angelique Kerber. After a pretty miserable 2017 season, she started 2018 on fire, was within a couple of match points of reaching the final, and you wouldn't have put it past her to win it. She's coming to Dubai next month as well, so it'd be great to have her here. And I think she can now be considered back in the mix and back in the running with all the top players.
No, absolutely. It was kind of baffling to see her sort of her fall away. And sometimes it is difficult once you get to the top of the mountain of knowing what's next. Like, we saw that with Novak Djokovic once. He worked so hard for his career Grand Slam. And Kerber had an amazing 2016, got herself to world number one. And but you could see the desire was there. And again, as with Halep, she lost to Halep, but she can feel that Halep won that match rather than her losing it. She left it all out there, which I think that's all you want from a tennis player, either as a supporter of them or the player themselves, is to know that on the day the other player was better than me. That's all you want them to is be able to sort of look themselves in the eye. And I've got no doubt Kerber's going to kick on. And I think certainly around Wimbledon, she'll be an absolute force.
Right, Graham, just to wrap up the show, just a quick fire predictions for the rest of the season. Based on what you've seen at the Australian Open, I want you to give me your French Open champion, your Wimbledon champion, and your US Open champion for the men and the women.
Okay, all right. French, I'm going to be boring and say Nadal, but Halep.
Okay.
The French.
Yep.
I think she'll finally do it there. Wimbledon, Federer and Kerber.
Nice.
And US Open, I'm going to go slightly outlandish and say Grigor Dimitrov. I think if we've seen anything from the US Open in recent years, it's like that's one almost like a last man standing kind of tournament in terms of there's so many injuries and tiredness around by that point of the year, and it sort of takes away. And for the women, I'm going to say Wozniacki.
Good stuff. You heard it here first. Graham, thanks very much for your time today.
Cheers. Thank you.
Well, that's all we have time for this podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and at the National website at thenational.ae. Thanks for listening.